You're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network.
Welcome to another episode of Geeks at Large, the second attempt, of recording this topic that we plan to talk about, to show a little transparency.
My eighth attempt.
Your eighth attempt, yeah. Casey just tried to do it by himself, like, six other times.
Sure, I got struck by lightning each time. I'm not sure why I decided to record on a roof, but hey, you know what?
I dare say it's a miracle that he's alive. Anyway, I am your host, Taylor.
The doctor says the same thing every day.
I'm your host, Taylor. I'm joined by Casey, who has already been talking and survived, what, six lightning bolts?
5.5. The last time I was also pushed off the roof at the same time.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of a twofer.
Yeah.
And then we're also joined by Neil.
Hi. I've been keeping quiet this whole time. I'm really proud of myself.
Well, that makes one of us.
Aww.
That's the website that we're on. One of us. Ha, but I'm... Okay. Anyway.
Oh, God.
So we're going to try
I'm going to give you half a clap, but I only got to move one hand for it.
What do you mean? You don't like my expert-level live reads on those podcasts?
Actually, I'll give you a full clap for that.
Yeah! It sounded like you, like, either spanked someone or, like, hit a fly.
Well, I did. That wasn't a clap. I did punch a homeless person. It's New York. What are you going to do?
No, Casey, that's your roommate.
Oh, God. No.
Spoilers, Casey lives in a box. It's a New York City apartment.
It's Brooklyn. I live on a box on a roof.
Box on a roof. That's the sequel.
Man on a Ledge, Box on a Roof, which are in the same cinematic universe as Adam Sandler's Just Go With It.
They're the famous Paul McCartney starring Wings cinematic universe.
Do you ever realize that Adam Sandler movies, a lot of their titles sound like things that sexual predators say? Like, just go with it, and...
That's my boy.
And click.
Yeah. And that's really about it. The thing is, I didn't think this joke through all the way before I said it.
I'm all the same, babe.
Just you get a library clap for that, Neil, which you can't hear because it's a fucking library clap.
Do sexual predators say The Wedding Singer on a regular basis?
Do they say Rain Over Me? They say Rain Over Me all the time.
Hey, oh, man, my God. Don't mess with the Zohan.
Oh, my God. All of these things sound like things that...
Hey, baby.
Like Angelo Buono could have said. That was a true crime reference, in case anyone gets it. If you get it, please comment in the comments below. Just kidding. That's like nobody's going to comment.
You say sexual predator. I say punch drunk love.
Stop it.
You say tomato. I say tomasi. Tomato. Oh. Tomasi.
Oh, my God.
You know, I think I told you about this. I watched Punch Drunk Love for the first time, and then later that night I watched Jack and Jill. Because that morning I watched The Godfather Part 2, so I saw an Al Pacino movie, an Adam Sandler movie, so I needed to watch a movie with the two of them together.
That's like drinking...
Godfather Part 2 plus Punch Drunk Love equal Jack and Jill.
That's like drinking a nice vermouth and then finishing it off with, like, sewer water. Like, why are you doing that?
Yes. Well, he is in New York City, where all the water is sewer water.
No, dude, real talk. New York City has one of the best water supplies in the country.
Apparently.
Sure they do. Not with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the sewer.
Well, yeah, but that's the wastewater. That's the stuff that's already been used.
Do you know that turtles bleed out of their shells? Think about all the water, like all the blood that's in that water.
It's pretty metal, man.
It'll taste like metal because it's blood. No, that's not a good thing. That's a bad thing. You should.
That's the reason why when you mix it with dough, you create the best bagels on the goddamn planet. I don't care how much water.
You need the blood water to make the classic family recipe bagels.
Did you just channel Bernie Sanders for a brief moment?
Yeah, I mean, he's from, like, Brooklyn or some shit, right?
Yeah, I think he was born in Brooklyn, if not Queens.
There you fucking go, then yes.
He's a
yes,
New Yorker.
What?
He is a New Yorker. Oh. One from New York. Or as they call themselves, New Yorker.
New Yorker. I'm walking here. Bang, bada bing.
I say I'm walking here way more often than I ever expected to in life.
you do or they do?
I
do. You do? Okay.
I say it unironically, and I want to stop, but I can't.
You also just yell out Midnight Cowboy.
I say I'm walking here all the time when I'm driving to work. It's funny because I'm not walking anywhere. It gets caught up on my dash cam recordings so people can hear me say it, and really it's embarrassing. So congratulations, I just opened up to all of you, and you're laughing, and you're throwing it back in my face.
It's why the Atlanta Police Department doesn't respond.
You won't know when or where, but I'll throw it back in your face, Neil. Anywho.
Actually, I have a dash cam in my car. I'll, like, if something really dumb happens, I'll throw it on my Facebook. So if you want to find me on Facebook and get some dash cam videos, go ahead. But I'm terrified of the fact that one day I will get into an accident and they will get the footage and it's going to have me, like, belting it out to, like, a Roxy music song.
What's the fucking Patton Oswalt, like?
Abba Gold.
Abba Gold, yeah.
Or just, well, the thief made of cinnamon and lemon drops.
Oh, my God.
Who's the greatest puppy? Who's the greatest puppy in the world?
It's going to be really... Anyways, sorry to distract with that horrible secret about myself.
Well, it will just be
that
you
was
doing...
your can I borrow a feeling.
It's just going to be you doing Werner Herzog impressions.
It's just me. It's literally nothing but me singing Roxy Music's Street Life over and over again.
Yeah.
And if you were to wiretap me while I walk down New York, you will likely hear me drunkenly singing all of Talking Heads Once in a Lifetime over and over again.
Yeah, but that song is great. And people know that song. I don't think anybody talks about Street Life anymore.
Street Life people? Waiting just to find emotion?
Hey, good looking boy, gather around.
That song.
Yeah, reminds me of a soundtrack to a movie.
Stop it.
The Royal Tenenbaums.
If you're trying to transition into our subject, this is the worst goddamn transition I've ever heard in my life.
You have been on way too many episodes to say that.
This is true. Okay, yeah, I was there from the inception. This is true. That was a dirty lie. I'm sorry, Casey. I should have thought better.
I'm going to, like, edit in, like, a Hans Zimmer, blah, if you said Inception, because, like, it made me giggle inside my head.
Oh, my God.
So, anyway, here's what we're going to do tonight, ladies and gentlemen, unless you're listening to this during the day, where, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, whatever, Truman Show. We're going to talk about a little bit of Baby Driver, little bit of Baby Driver to, like, a little appetizer, and then a little Spiderman, Homecoming. Spiderman, homecoming dance. So, that would be our entree. What's all our jokes that we came up with, Casey? What was your joke for the alternative title for Spider-Man Homecoming?
Spider-Man Winter Formal?
Yeah, that one. That one. Insert laugh track here.
Spider-Man, the school year's over, so we're just playing Hangman in the office?
As a Spider-Man Senior Skip Day. Spider-Man National Honor Society Bake Sale.
Spider-Man, my mom walked in on me while I was masturbating.
That's my favorite.
I think the thing I love most about this Spider-Man movie is that it and its porn parody will have the same name.
Except it will be spelled differently.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Homecoming. I'm a man, and I'm coming, Spider-Man. I'm a man,
okay,
and I'm coming.
I was at a party last weekend, and I had to play that clip to people because nobody knew who Alex Jones was.
Which is probably a good thing.
I think you introduced them to the concept of the...
I think I might have actually made the situation worse if
yeah,
I think.
Dude. Come on. I think he obviously deserves the Oscar for best animated short. I agree.
Well, I had to explain, like, I was explaining this to people at the party. I played them the clip, and they thought it was hilarious. And then I had to explain to them, this guy has White House press credentials, and it wasn't funny anymore.
And then, specifically, Nine Inch Nails Hurt came on, covered by Kermit the Frog, because gay frogs.
Speaking of which...
Well, no, have I told you about this, Neil? When I was still writing for Truthang, which... Listeners was a thing I wrote for, and it was great, and then Clickhole stole our bits. But at a point, for the sake of research, I was on the store to InfoWars, and now all of my Google ads are InfoWars products.
That's awful. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, like, there's fucking, goddamn, what's it called? There's fluoride-free toothpaste. Or Brain Force Plus, their brain medication.
My favorite one is where there's like a supplement pill or something that's supposed to help you lose weight or something, and Alex Jones took a before and after picture, and really it just shows that Alex Jones knows how to suck in his gut.
That's right. That's very true.
Although, have you seen pictures of Alex Jones when he was younger? Oof.
Oof.
He was
your girlfriend. Oof.
He was a young daddy.
I'm thinking of the Onion article where John Boehner goes to Paul Ryan on his first day as Speaker of the House and goes, I was young and beautiful once like you.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Young Alex Jones was a fucking daddy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
What a waste.
Oh yeah.
What a fucking waste.
Oh,
god
yeah.
Damn it.
I know. I keep hoping that people will rediscover Alex Jones's Bohemian Grove video because the person that filmed that for him, went along with him on that, is a guy named John Ronson, who is a British journalist, mm-hmm. who is one of probably my favorite current author. He's nonfiction. But for people to get a reference on who he is, he co-wrote Okja on Netflix.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he co-wrote that. So
thing a Ouija board ever said to me.
What's it?
My favorite thing a Ouija board ever said to me.
Stop.
That might be racist, Casey.
also, he wrote Frank, which is also on Netflix. And if you have not seen that, it's wonderful. So John Ronson, please go read his stuff. Make that man a living, please.
Take my wife, please.
I'm not married.
Okay. Oh. Me neither. Casey is, though.
It's true, but it didn't last long.
You can only be married to your hand legally for so long.
My hand said it didn't want any child out of wedlock.
My wife asked me about open marriages, and that was when I knew it was over.
Oh, man. Speaking of open marriages, let's talk about Baby Driver.
Okay, that was the worst segue I've ever
heard. It's the best. So.
Let's agree. Disagree.
Word with you, Neil.
What's that?
Neil, as the biggest Edgar Wright fan on the show, would you mind giving us just a brief, intro to what Baby Driver is?
Okay, a brief intro to what Baby Driver is. Okay, the plot synopsis can really boil down to boy gets in trouble and then he's not in trouble anymore.
I love it.
Yeah, that's like the best. I don't know. It's a standard crime story. Like it's so hard to explain the plot and have people stay awake by the end of your description.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing about it's not what it's about, it's how it's about. So it's this kid who is a getaway driver for the Atlanta Mafia, and he gets a one last job thing, and he falls in love with a waitress at a nearby coffee shop. But the gig is I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. The gimmick is, thank you. The gimmick is supposedly this character, like this character, got into a car accident way back in his earlier life, and now he has tinnitus. And in order to drown out the tinnitus, he has headphones in all the time, attached to an iPod, which plays music constantly. And the movie syncs up to the music that's playing on the playlist. So basically, it's basically a jukebox musical. Oh my God, what is happening to me? I can't talk.
Jukebox is a very hard word to say, I found.
Thank you. It's like whenever I go to Martin's and I order a large steak and egg biscuit and a large sausage and egg. See, that's what happens all the time. And I mess up and I say, I'm so sorry to the waitresses or to the lady, the cashier. And the cashier's been there for like 2 hours and she truly doesn't give a shit. And I'm making a bigger deal about it. And then by the time I get to the window to get my biscuits, I'm crying.
Anyway, moving on to Spider-Man.
What I'm trying to say is that Martin has the best biscuits, and you should go get them because they're better than Chick-fil-A because they're open on Sundays.
Cheeseburger biscuit, this is how you mix it.
But how will you make me feel good about putting down the gaze?
Oh my God.
Okay, please continue, Neil.
is this the old Casey coming back? Casey, I'm not a fan of the mixing of the races, Gerard.
MAGA.
You thought we forgot.
MAGA.
Oh, no. That's my favorite sequel to Moana. Anyways, Baby Driver. Okay, so the soundtrack is an eclectic collection of hits from the 60s to all the way to the modern times. It'd be old Motown soul to hip-hop.
The hippity-hoppity.
You guys, it's so delightful. I'm not going to say I loved it, and I have to say that it might be I don't want to say it's my least favorite Edgar Wright, but it's an important Edgar Wright movie, and I think when it comes to the other ones, like his other films, they're all co-penned by Simon Pegg, and Simon Pegg would be great to have on here. Like, Simon Pegg has all these really great comedy bits, but the thing is, Baby Driver is not really a comedy. It's an action movie with comedic moments in there, and there's a big distinction. Like, I've laughed plenty of times in the movie, but I would be hard-pressed to call it a comedy. It's not as good as his other movies, I have to say, but even then, that's still better than, I would say, 98% of the shit that comes out any other year. So I don't even want to call it subpar, because it's not. It's a great movie to me. It's hard to analyze it outside of the bubble of Edgar Wright's previous movies. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You can't – it's hard to separate them because even then if somebody sees this for the first time and they're not familiar with Edgar Wright, they're going to – I don't know what anyone would think about that, but I think it would be hard to get them on board. So it exists in a bubble because it has to. It has to exist in that bubble. It's very frustrating to talk objectively about Baby Driver. I am finding out as I talk right now. This is really difficult.
As these sounds come out of my mouth, my food hole.
Please help me. help me, please. I'm going to be like that guy in Texas who was fixing an ATM machine, and he got trapped inside. So he didn't have his phone on him, so he was literally writing out help me notes and sending them out through the receipt slot to people.
Boy, that
is a real story. That is something that actually happened.
How is the machine big enough for him to get in there without, like, how much empty space is in the machine?
Apparently enough to keep a full-sized man in there.
That's my favorite Scooby-Doo mystery, the case of the haunted ATM machine. Cheating.
Is it bugging anyone else that we're saying ATM machine when the M in ATM stands for machine?
Does it bother you when people call chai tea, even though chai is tea?
No, but that's only because I want to also open up a coffee bar / dojo called Chai Tea Tai Chi.
That's my joke, you asshole. I said that Tai Chi Chai Tea sounded like a great band name.
Motherfucker, I've been saying this since 2014.
I've been saying it since 2014 as well, you bastard.
I mean, anyway, like, the fans are just going to call it...
Either way, the bands are just going to call it
CTTC.
I know. We're going to have to find this out. We're going to have to battle it out to the death, by which I mean we're going to have to kiss.
No, no, we're going to do it at my other business, Soho Slow Bros, a southern, a downtown Manhattan sewing shop designed to teach men how great sewing is.
Okay, you win. Never mind. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to come at you with that. I shouldn't have come at you with that. It was good.
I'm glad you didn't say Soho Sohos, like it's all ladies, because that would have been sexist, Casey.
No, Soho Sobros, because sewing is a gender-neutral skill that more men should learn how to do.
Good it's true. On I you, Casey.
It's true. I learned it, and it did not help women sleep with me at all, but I did. It did help things around the house, so yeah. It's really good.
No,
it's very progressive of you, Casey. Flo from Progressive would be proud.
No,
what are you talking about? I'm the one who learned how to sew, goddammit.
So did I, Neil. I wear mostly suit jackets and dress pants.
Oh my god, you're Ben Kissel. I don't want you getting congratulations. I want the congratulations, darn it.
Well, you should have founded Soho Sobros.
Speaking of bros, Baby Driver.
Oh my god. All of these are getting progressively worse.
Well, if we stay on topic.
I don't want to.
Well, then you're going to have to be subjected to more awful segues.
Fine. Okay, Baby Driver is really good. Casey, what do you think?
I think Edgar Wright is overrated.
Why do you say these things that hurt me?
In all honesty, Edgar Wright is a very good filmmaker, and more than almost any other comedy director out there right now, it is clear that he has a vision. He knows what to do in order to make that vision come through. Very little in his movies seems unintentional, but I do not personally care for a lot of his vision.
That's fair. I kind of have the same feeling with Brian De Palma. Everyone just loves him, and Brian De Palma.
Brian De Palma, Neil. I think we're on the same page.
Okay, awesome. Brian De Palma is just...
In that case, you're just wrong, Casey.
Yeah, I think... Brian De Palma drives me up a goddamn wall. Like, his shots, his films are visually beautiful, but his performances, all of them, every single performance in every movie of his, aside from Blowout, which is a really good movie, if you've never seen it, it's really good.
Had a blowout.
That's a terrible thing to call your ejaculation, Sailor.
What if it was from the other end? That's what I was talking about.
That's a terrible thing to call your diarrhea, Taylor.
That's what everyone calls their diarrhea.
I call it diarrhea. What are you talking about?
Well, that's just fucking boring.
I went to college, okay? I'm past that age.
Thanks, Plankton. Jesus.
I went to college, okay? I don't have to, I'm past that time.
I
have to call it my
you.
Boom boom. I shaved the other day.
Boom boom after that.
Also, I paid my health insurance. Mm-hmm. I had to cancel my health insurance because I got some with my full time job. That was cool and also really adult. And I listened to adult contemporary jazz the other day. Mm-hmm. I didn't care for it that much, but the fact that I said I thought that it was banal says that I am an adult.
You are such a SpongeBob bit. I'm just waiting for you to freak out when I tell you you're using too much sauce.
Hey, Casey, where are the pickles? Am I right?
Hey, tell me about the hash-slinging slasher now.
Oh, God. If you wanted to listen to me, if you thought that me tripping up on saying steak and egg biscuit and sausage and egg biscuit was delightful, you really, really want to listen to me trip up over the hash-slinging slasher.
Yeah. Okay.
I said it without tripping up. That's great. I'm really happy.
Mm-hmm. So, are we still on Casey's thoughts on Baby Driver?
No, we
didn't even get to my thoughts on Baby Driver. I'm just Edgar Wright in general.
You're just Edgar Wright sucks ass.
I think Hot Fuzz is pretty good.
I hope you're recording that.
I am recording that.
Good.
Do not take that out of context.
No, guys, listeners, Casey loves Hot Fuzz. Don't take it out of context. He doesn't just think it's pretty good. He loves it.
When Casey is making
love. I do not.
And he hates The World's End. That's his least favorite. He hates that one.
When when Casey is making love to a woman and the woman says, "Hey, baby, why don't you put something in so we can both watch and get ourselves in the mood?" Casey puts in the Blu-ray of Hot Fuzz.
Specifically my Blu-ray of Hot Fuzz.
What's that?
Specifically my Blu-ray of Hot Fuzz. Casey stole it from me. He broke into my house.
Yeah, so I was about to say, I don't have it on Blu-ray, but I think I still have the DVD somewhere.
Okay. Well, either way, it ends with the woman leaving you. So there you go.
The end.
Look, if I had a woman in bed and I was going to show her a movie, it would obviously be Taxi Driver.
It obviously
why
be
no
Harold
women
and
come
Mom.
Into your bed.
It'd obviously be El Topo.
What's that?
I said it'll obviously be El Topo.
Is El Topo a song?
Yeah,
one
baby.
With, like,
I'm gonna put in a bridge too far because it's really long, and that's how long I last. Yeah, baby.
Hey, babe. Want to go back to my place and watch Boyhood? Because I am 12 years.
Ooh, I love watching this child go through adolescence.
I just want to ask, which one is it, El Topo or Santa Sangre? The one with the tiger tits that are spraying out milk.
I have no idea, but it's now confirmed that Casey is the Jared Fogle of the group. Hey, baby, I love making love to the Oogie Labs because they have love in the title.
Oh my god.
No, I picked Boyhood because, like Boyhood, I took 12 years to make.
Yeah, that's exactly what Jared Fogle said at his trial. God damn it.
I thought at his trial he said I fucked kids.
Well, yeah, but that was his excuse, is that he watched Boyhood because it takes him 12 years to come.
I thought it was that he liked only people under 12.
Well, you know, yeah, he doesn't like the later parts of the movie.
Oh my god.
It's implied that me and Jared Fogle have the same
opinion. Speaking
of
pedophilia, Casey, give your thoughts on Baby Driver.
Alright, credit where credit is due. That was pretty good.
Yeah. Let's see. Shaun of the Dead, I think, is okay. I do not care for Hot Fuzz, despite how many times Taylor edits in my gaff earlier. And
this is gonna be super obvious. Like, I love Baby Driver. Or I love Hot Fuzz. It's like
I think the Scott Pilgrim is pretty great, and The World's End is one of my favorite movies. And Baby Driver starts off with me really liking it. I adore the opening, or not the opening scene, but the second scene where it's just him walking down the street and it's synced up to Harlem Shuffle, and you see like the lyrics like graffitied on the wall, or people handing out flyers, or somebody's hung it on a signpost, stuff like that. That was all fantastic. And then there's a love story there. It's like, oh, I really care for this. This is Edgar Wright without the stuff that drives me crazy about Edgar Wright when he's a little too in your face. I'm really falling in love with this. None of what I loved about it was present in the third act of this movie. And that's the big thing. I cannot talk about this movie without getting spoilers for why I didn't like it.
Yeah, so we'll do spoiler warning, and I'll put in little time codes for where you can skip to if you still haven't seen Baby Driver. So, yeah.
So, the big thing is that Edgar Wright, if nothing else, is a very unique director. Correct, guys?
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like it's a trap. I say no, it's a trap.
It's a trap! I mean, he is. I'm not gonna say bullshit and say he's not. So.
Well, thanks for ruining my point by saying he's not unique, guys. No, he's... He's a great director, which makes it just surprising me that the last half hour is as generic as it is.
Okay.
A lot of it stems from really forced character decisions and stuff that seems borderline studio mandated.
Okay, Neil.
Go on, keep digging your grave, Casey.
This is a lot more combative than the first recording.
No, I'm just tired. It's been a rough day.
Hi, tired. I'm dead.
Stop it.
Hi, Dad. I'm Donald Trump Jr. You named me after you. Did I make you proud?
Hi, Dad. I don't know who you are.
Cats in the cradle with the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man in the moon.
Oh, my God.
I bet right here. If that is not Donald Trump Jr.'s ringtone, it is Eric's.
We'll run with it, sure. Then.
We'll commit treason then.
You know we'll have light treason then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He's my third time around, and that's okay.
Okay, so Casey, go into specifically what you don't like about the third act. Like, specifically, like, the different moments. Not all of them, but, like, the big ones.
The big ones are one that a lot of people point out, and I am no exceptionist. Kevin Spacey, it grows very antagonistic to Baby after Baby essentially betrays him and makes a heist go horribly wrong and people die. And between that and 2 minutes later, Kevin Spacey decides to forgive him, decides to help him escape, decides to lay down his life in order to make sure Baby escapes from John Hamm. None of that really works. It is all very forced, and it seems like Edgar Wright wrote himself into a corner and didn't know what to do and didn't fix it, which is very surprising considering the uniqueness and ability to stick to character that's resonated through all of his movies.
All right. Neil, rebuttal.
I think it comes down to another one of those things of, like, it's not what it's about, it's how it's about. To me, like, the genericness of it and whatnot just seemed like the basic simpleness of the story seemed like a springboard for all the, like, fun stuff that Edgar Wright wanted to do. And I'm not going to say that's necessarily, like, a bad thing for it. I think it's just, like, the definition of your mileage may vary. Because, like, I know that Steven and I kind of butted heads on this a little bit. And by butted heads, I mean, like, we slightly disagreed and then we went and got dinner. And that was it.
Yes, Neil, Geeks at Large alum Steven Ingram, yes.
I'm just going to say that I ate those pot stickers a little antagonistically.
As you stared daggers at him.
That's a line from Supergirl.
What's that?
I swear that's a line from Supergirl.
Oh, literally, probably.
Literally every time they get food is pot stickers.
I mean, pot stickers are delicious, and if you pay $12 over TGI Fridays, you can get never-ending pot stickers if you want.
All the pot stickers you could ever want, which is probably...
Now listen, millennials, you can kill Applebee's as much as you want, just please don't take away TGI Fridays from me. Until TGI Fridays gets rid of those pot stickers, in which case, you can burn the place to the goddamn ground, I don't care.
I still have no idea what pot stickers are, so I assume they're a metaphor for drugs.
They're dumplings.
Sure, why not?
They're basically... The dumplings.
They're dumplings. They're dumplings. They come with like a...
You don't
a
Asians soy. Or their food, Casey, so you wouldn't know.
They come with like a soy sauce, and it's great. Sure. I love them.
Is your goal for this episode to make me appear like a racist sailor?
I mean, to be fair, you did that a lot for yourself back in 2011. We're just going to take advantage of that.
MAGA.
I hope we don't ruin
it. Is that how you say it? I always thought it was MAGA.
I really wish you ran in England so then it could be MEGA.
MEGA?
MAGA Man.
MAGA Man! Super breakthrough.
Anyway, I guarantee you that fan art exists.
MAGA Man!
Probably. If it doesn't, any listeners out there, if you'd like to do that, please do. And then tag us in hashtag Geeks at Large. Please don't do that. We don't need to be associated with that. Anyways,
yes,
only if you put more frogs in it.
Oh, God. Okay, so anyways, Baby Driver, thoughts on the third act. It's not something that bothers me as much, because, like, Taylor, you and I talked about it a little bit. Like, it didn't bother it as much as like, it did with Casey and Steven. The thing is, like, screenwriting and whatnot, that is definitely way more in, like, Casey and Steven's...
Well, yeah, Casey and Steven are both writers.
Yeah, they're both writers, whereas, like, I'm more of, like, an editor. Like, I'm more of a technical guy. Mm-hmm. And Taylor, I don't know what you do, so it ends up
to
you.
I mean, I draw comics.
Do you?
Yes, actually.
Okay, cool.
Yes, on a weekly basis, he has content.
Actually, yeah, I can throw shit as much as I want, but Taylor...
I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, I have a comic, and it's like, oh, I did
last,
these...
Last update at 2013.
Yeah.
I know, as much as I can throw shit, I can't, because Taylor is very productive on an incredibly regular basis, and I have a full-time job that eats up all of my time, and it makes me miserable. So, actually, no, I love my job. It's just there are times that I miss filming. I miss making things. So, yeah.
Wow,
all of a sudden.
And I get things. And I get naked in Times Square until cops arrest me.
Which is surprisingly a long time from what I
Big deal, Casey. We all do that on a Saturday night. It's just a different park, okay?
Times Square isn't a park, Neil. It's an intersection.
I don't care. Whatever. Everything's a park over there. Everybody loves New York City.
It's you like, say intersection, I say tomato. Whatever. Fuck you.
You haven't lived until you've been to New York. All the food everywhere is disgusting. But the city, they always say that. It's like, oh, there's just something about this city. Right? It's like 12 pigeons shit in their mouths.
On purpose.
I want to know who you're talking to that says the food is disgusting. I guarantee you it's one of the best places to eat in the country.
And maybe the world!
They're just throwing shit. It's fine.
Neil... What? Neil, hey buddy, why don't you come over here and we'll dish it out outside?
Hey, come over here. Maria, come over here.
Like, I have seen somebody threaten someone to take someone outside to the parking lot for a fight on a building that doesn't have a parking lot.
That's amazing.
It was fascinating.
No, I would actually love to. I hope to come up there at some point. Or you can always just come down here when we get our apartment.
Or you can come visit me, and I'll leave you behind in a park until you cry.
Oh, man. You're like the third person to do that to me.
It's okay, Neil. He'll leave us alone by ourselves, and we'll just recreate Home Alone 2 and befriend a nice pigeon lady.
I like that one
better. Donald Trump can give you directions.
Well, like, you know, maybe.
I like Home Alone 2 better than Home Alone 1 because technically all of the traps in Home Alone 2 are fucking lethal.
I like it because it has the World Trade Center in it.
I like it because it has it has number 45 in there helping a kid find his destination.
That there, 45, he's the best fucking president since Andrew Jackson.
Did you see Hillary Clinton do that in Home Alone 2? I don't fucking think
so. No, she does that in Home Alone 4, though, taking back the house.
No, Home Alone 4 is the one with the smart house that's, like, got all the technology. Yeah,
are you sure that just isn't the classic Disney Channel original movie, Smart House?
No, it's
oh, okay. Not. So they just ripped off Smart House.
But it has French Stewart dressed as, he plays Harry, but he's dressed as Marv.
This is not an endorsement. This is more of an indictment of the film.
Can we all just agree that
Hillary Clinton can get 6 Benghazi hearings, I think there needs to be 1 hearing about Home Alone 4.
6 Benghazi hearings? What is this, like the new updated 12 Days of Christmas? What the shit?
Can we all just agree that all of French Stewart's roles are in one cinematic universe, and it's called the French Stewart universe? And it includes
French Home Alone. Universe.
Can we just call it the French Dip?
The French Dip universe?
Sure, why not?
It's just, and it includes a bunch of shitty fucking sequels. And, yeah. Like Inspector Gadget 2.
Which is a shame, because French Stewart deserves better, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
The French universe exists.
I got it wrong. We need to call that French Stewart cinematic universe the French Connection.
Yes! There you go.
This is why you guys have me on. Anyways, okay.
It is?
I don't know. I guess you guys liked me or something.
That's not it.
Okay.
That's an okay guess, but that's not it, Neil.
Neil, that is wildly off base.
Could it be that we felt sorry for him?
Entirely possible.
I mean...
I thought it was that you guys liked me. Neil, it's not nice to spread lies.
Fake news. That's
oh, my God. Sorry, I'm looking up a band called Japanese Breakfast. It's a ridiculous name, but I gotta say, I'm a fan.
I heard that as Japanese Brexit.
Every time someone says Brexit, I think that they're trying to say breakfast.
Let's go get some Brexit.
I mean, at my job, I have to listen to a whole bunch of old people say, full English breakfast, please. And the way that their lips smack while they're saying it and, like, the audio quality of their lav mics while they say it, it makes me want to die.
That's going to be in your gravestone, Neil.
Well, to be fair, I mean, like, something new makes me want to die, like, every 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, like, just this, like, 6 months ago, I was saying that Pentatonix's cover of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah made me want to die because everyone was like, this song will give you chills. Like, if there was one thing I didn't want in the world, it was a new cover of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah done by the band with the most punchable faces.
Limp Bizkit.
Shut up, Casey. To be fair, yeah, no. Anyways, Baby Driver.
See, now when I hear Limp Bizkit, I just think of that one joke from Silicon Valley. You finished Silicon Valley, right, Casey?
Yeah, I'm caught up.
Yeah, remember where, like, they had to explain what a Limp Bizkit was? And then, like, Richard Thomas Middleditch's character goes and tries to get support from programmers, and then it comes up again awkwardly, and some guy's like, hey, I know what a Limp Bizkit is, and like some a woman who's there is like, what's a Limp Bizkit? And then he goes to graphically explain what it is. So, anyway, go to Urban Dictionary and look what a Limp Bizkit is. You'll have fun. Anyway, Baby Driver.
I'm gonna do that right now. Just kidding, I'm not going to.
You got a show to do, Neil.
Yeah, no, from a screenwriting standpoint, I understand, like, I'm not going to say anything about that. It's wrong, necessarily. I think it's one of those, like, the definition of your mileage may vary.
Right.
I think it's just, like, because I was just so enraptured by everything that was happening in the movie that some of the things that would technically, that would, I mean, I'm not going to lie, they're shortcuts, they're cliche, like, they didn't bother me. I was just really caught up in what the movie was trying to do. I think this is like, cause I've seen this from other people too, and I've seen other people say it doesn't bother them. And I guess we can safely say this is the new gold and white or black and blue dress.
Wow.
Like, everyone acknowledges, I haven't seen somebody deny they're there. Everyone says they are. Most of the time it's, yeah, but I didn't mind it.
Yeah.
Well,
it gets down to a bigger thing, and we're going to get into this a little bit later, but it gets down to
Spider-Man.
Yeah, it was Spider-Man. It gets down to what it feels like to try to pick apart a movie. And there can be things that are big, glaring flaws that you're willing to overlook because emotionally it's connecting and resonating with you.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing with me with the end of Baby Driver is enough had happened that it threw me out of it to a point where the movie did not connect with me anymore. And when it doesn't connect with you, every single nitpick, every single minor issue explodes.
Well, yeah, because essentially what you're doing is that you're like diverting your attention. Since you're not really entertained or connected with the story, you're not paying attention to it, every glaring flaw becomes so much more pronounced because that's what you're paying attention to. I would say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, that's why, like, when we watch Sucker Punch.
Or your ability to forgive what's going on.
Right.
Is a lot, you're a lot less lenient about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It's like with Baby Driver, at its core, it's a love story between two people who want to get away from their lives. And that is something that resonates with me. But as the movie went on, I less wanted Baby's love interest, Deborah, to run away with him and more to run off by herself, steal his iPods, and then she goes away listening to his music, and that's how she's able to run away with him. Or some shit like that.
That's what your version of the script would say. Some script like that at the end.
That's my thought. It's like, you know, if this movie's going to go for a pretty by-the-numbers ending, how do you make that better? And that's what I came up with. It's like, oh, I like that. I'll ship on the ending. Edgar Wright, I'm going to mail this to you in 2015 when you might have cared.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much on the side with Neil, where it's just like, and that's the thing, like, I feel like shitty just being like, well, I just didn't care.
Like, I was like, the movie
I feel like that dog in the fire, like, well, this is fine. Like,
yeah.
But it's like, it is a thing, but it's just like, yeah, like, I was so kind of entrenched with the music, because, you know, I know, like, all of us are basically like this, but, like, I'm pretty easy to please when you can successfully sync music and action in a movie or anything, really, you know, that I can get really into it. So I think that helped the movie with me. So Like, even during, like, the betrayal scene where the botched heist, where Bats and gets killed and whatever Buddy's girlfriend was, I forget what her name was. Do you remember? Anybody?
Betty Don't worry Francis. About it too much.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, like, that whole thing, like, there are, like, logical plot, like, there are, like, logic holes in it, like, Casey, you pointed out, like, why would he try to outrun the cops in a security-filled, you know, mall with security cameras? And it's like, yeah, boy, I liked it. Like, because I was just wrapped up in, like, all the action and the sequencing, and the pacing of it was just keeping my attention, I guess, and the music, too. Because, you know, playing Focus's Hocus Pocus doesn't hurt.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
And, yeah, like, and it's like, like, my somewhat joking response to your criticisms being, but it's Kevin Spacey, Casey.
That rhymes, too. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, that's it. Kevin Spacey really missed out on his calling as a manure salesman, because he can sell any shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm right, he can. That's why he played a politician. Waka waka.
That's why he played a talking cat.
I still want to see Nine Lives.
I've seen the first 30 minutes. It's actually pretty funny.
Legitimately funny, or like so bad it's good funny?
He's pretty funny. Everything else sucks.
Okay.
Like, I'm never going to forget the moment where I'm watching it with my roommates, and it's a body swap movie. It's not like his...
It's a Shaggy Dog.
No, Shaggy Dog is a transformation. This is like his brain.
Oh, that's fucking right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it's like Freaky Friday and the Shaggy Dog.
Yeah, his mind goes into the body of a cat who's been alive. And I think it was like, wait, so did they swap bodies and he's going to wake up and start licking himself? And at like 5 seconds after I asked that, Kevin Spacey's narration goes, I wonder if this means there's a cat in my body.
Just Kevin Spacey reading that line. That man was in like Richard the Third, and like is a very accomplished thespian, and he's in Nine Fucking Lives.
To be fair, I'm pretty sure Patrick Stewart has an equivalent of Nine Lives.
Yeah, probably.
I call it Green Room.
No.
Nah, I call it Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah. So that's basically, I guess that's where we'll start wrapping up Baby Driver's Ed. Obviously, it is like your mileage may vary movie, and for Neil and I, because, and I think part of it is because we are Edgar Wright fans. Like, if you're an Edgar Wright fan, I think it's very safe to say you'll get something out of it.
Or if you're like me and think Edgar Wright's obnoxious, it's still probably worth watching because
so obnoxious that you like that you love two of his movies.
Yeah,
I do love two of his movies. I love them despite his style, I would say.
Oh, what do you
And got? As, like, and it's like I said, nothing he does is unintentional, but he's a very in-your-face director with how he shoots and how he edits. There's no one else quite like that going on right now. And if you're not with it, it can come off as obnoxious.
That's Ryan and I were having a conversation about this a while ago where we were talking about J.J. Abrams, and it's like J.J. Abrams is one of those guys that you have to absolutely be on board with, like, because once you fall off that carousel, it is hard to get back on. And I think Force Awakens was kind of what did it for me a little bit, where you just kind of realize, like, J.J. Abrams will sacrifice a plot point or plot logic for an emotional beat. And that emotional beat is going to hit, don't get me wrong, but it's once you sit back and you think about it where you're like, wait a minute, that was kind of dumb.
wait a minute, that was pretty dumb.
Yeah, and like once Ryan pointed that out to me, I was like, you know what, he's not wrong. Because, yeah, there are a lot of things about Force Awakens where, like, in the moment where I was like, yeah, this is awesome. And then when I sat down and thought about it, I was like, that was stupid.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing, like, J.J. Abrams would probably be, like, my Edgar, like, the Edgar Wright of, like, the, whatever the analogy is, but, like, you know, Casey is with Edgar Wright, that's probably yeah. me with J.J. Abrams, and that...
No, I agree.
I like two of his movies quite a bit, which is the original Star Trek reboot movie that he did and Force Awakens. I think Super 8's, like, okay. I think it's a solid...
Super 8 is half of a great movie.
It's half of a good movie, and then, like, I need to rewatch it, but, like, his Mission Impossible movie, Mission Impossible 3...
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good, but I like...
It holds up.
Yeah, it holds up, but I think I prefer 4 and 5.
I don't know, I do too. I mean, I think 3 kind of gets overlooked, which is kind of a shame, but I mean, objectively, the other ones are better.
Well, it's also like, it's like this weird sandwich where it's like the good one, but not remarkable, you know?
It's the spring, it's the launching pad for other better movies.
Well, yeah, but it's also sandwiched between the horrendously bad, hilariously bad, too.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, 1, which is cool, but it's also dated. And then 5, which just get progressive. Like, well, I like 4 more than 5, but you get what I'm saying. They get better, kind of.
Yeah.
So.
That is actually something I never actually sat down and thought about. Like, which one do I like better, 4 or 5?
I think I'm still with 4, but...
Yeah.
I might, whatever. I'm weird when it comes to, like favorite things, because it's always like, oh, well, today I feel like I like this, and tomorrow I'll feel like I like this, and, you know.
No, I gotcha.
I did the same thing with my kids once, and it was just hell on them.
So it was your Sophie's Choice, and it lasted 2 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's like Sophie's Choice, except one is so obviously better than the other that you kind of have to fake having a competition between the two just to make them feel better.
All right, Eric.
I was thinking of, like, how do I make this a Trump kids joke? How do I do it? Okay, so that's... I guess we'll say that... We'll end there on Baby Driver.
We touched on Baby Driver a little bit. Mostly, we just made bad jokes. And you know what? Yeah. That's fine. I think that's why people tune in anyways.
It's a good movie. And did you want to mention, like, pacing or editing at all? You know, like, just a little bit?
No.
Like your thing. Okay, no.
I'll talk about it for just a tiny bit. I mean, like, the pacing and editing in this is, like, impeccable. Like, it's great. Yeah. I love it.
I feel like you're, like Ron Burgundy in Anchorman, where he's asked to play the flute. And you're like, oh, no, I can't possibly talk about editing as you pull out, like, your copy of Avid.
I think, you know, I'm looking at my Avid sticker, at, like, my two stickers on my two Avid stickers on my laptop. One of them is the Avid logo, which is slowly peeling off, and the other one is the keyboard layout, because I thought it was an actual, like, keyboard sticker set where you can put the keys on there, and it was literally a sticker with the layout.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel a little ripped off.
And at that point, he stopped trusting people.
I haven't trusted people in a long time.
I got trust issues now.
So. I've had trust issues ever since I dipped my hand into a bunch of cookies. I thought it was a chocolate chip cookie, and it was a raisin.
So, fuck you, God.
Didn't like it. Didn't like it at all. Women are the devil. I'm just kidding. Can't trust them. No, women are lovely.
Pandering.
You white knight. Anyways, I don't know. I think it's because I feel kind of burnt out from the last time that we talked about it, and then, like, we lost all of our progress on the podcast.
Well, thanks, Mother Nature, for causing that power outage.
Yeah, that's really, she just, our takes were too hot.
Too hot. Hot takes.
For this world.
Hot
takes. But, I mean, like, Edgar Wright, it's why I'm totally fine with there being more diversity in filmmaking and whatnot, because I love seeing different points of view. And I feel like if there's something that we're not seeing a whole lot now, it's different points of view. It's new points of view. Right. We're just getting a whole bunch of people who are like, I loved Spielberg when I grew up, so everything I do is vaguely Spielbergian. Like, hey, guys, did you ever see a Tarantino movie? I do that, too. And it's like, if I have to watch another sad independent movie about some white dude who has to go back home because some family member died, and then he's gonna find his, like, he's gonna join his old quirky group of friends from high school that have all never have that none of them have grown up. He's the only one who moved out, and then he's gonna fall in love with this lady. If I have to watch another one of those goddamn movies again, I'm gonna shit a brick. Which is why I'm fine with things like Moonlight. Even La La Land, to an extent, you know, it's a giant throwback to old musicals, but it's done with like a modern flourish, and it's showing that like, hey, we still can, in a world that's full of nothing, like in a filmmaking climate that's basically nothing but like coverage and static shots, and like, oh well, we just got to make sure we get that angle right there, which is something I'm going to go into when we talk about Spider-Man. You know, to have something like La La Land where every shot is carefully planned out and it's like everything is just so carefully staged. You know, it's really refreshing to see that people still care about that stuff. But like even like Swiss Army Man, which is so fucking bizarre, and you can safely say that you haven't really seen that much like it. You know, it's a unique mm-hmm. perspective. I'm totally down for unique perspectives. Yeah. And Edgar Wright is one of those guys, like for better or for worse, you know, regardless, like, you know, in spite of where you stand on him, you can't. There are very few filmmakers nowadays where I can point at something and say, oh, that's definitely like Spielbergian. Like if I'm pointing at a Spielberg movie, like, oh, yeah, that's a Spielberg trait. You don't see a whole lot of that nowadays because you get that whole cycle of inspiration and lifting. It's like Miyazaki talks about how, you know, the death of film is coming because there are no new perspectives. Like nobody goes out and experiences the world. It's all just like, it's all just copying your heroes. Mm-hmm. And Edgar Wright is one of those people that I can safely say, like, that's him. Like, and especially it comes down to the pacing and editing.
Which is what's fascinating about Edgar Wright, because it's very clear that he's referencing a lot of things.
You know, but he's doing it in his own way.
Right. It's like, but it's seen through his lens, pardon, maybe intended, I don't know.
Why not? Go ahead.
Probably not. But, yeah, like that's the irony of that, is, like, it is a fresh and the same could be said about Tarantino, you know, is that, like, they're both huge film fans, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm sure they have their own heroes, but, you know, it's very clear that they know that they have to do it from their own perspective, you know?
Yeah.
And, in our first recording, I brought up the fact that, like, you know, it's so abundantly clear how much Edgar Wright is just passionate about films and making films. And he loves film. Like, he loves the really obscure shit and all this stuff, and he can tell you this trivia, but he can still but not be, like, a fucking pain in the ass about it, you know? And it reminds me a lot of Scorsese, where, like, Scorsese, you know,
Scorsese is a literal student of film.
Yeah, like, I love hearing Scorsese talk about film, like, when he was on, like, Turner Classic Movies or something, talking about, like, what was it, The Red Shoes, and it was, like, one of his favorite movies. And, you know, it's kind of cool to see, like, a generational thing between, like, Scorsese and Wright, because Scorsese, obviously, it's, like, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, and then, like, Edgar Wright's, like, 70s, 80s, like, the very, like, genre movies. Like, that's what Edgar Wright, not that they're on the same level, per se, I'm not comparing them in terms of style, but just in terms of kind of importance and understanding of their medium, where obviously Wright is much more about genre. You know, he's seen all kinds of exploitation movies and horror movies and action movies, and that's why, like, so many of his movies are just send-ups to stuff. But you have to do it. It's like the age-old rule about doing parodies and satires is, well, parodies in film anyway. Is like you have to have some love for what you're parodying.
They have to come from a place of love rather than a place of hate.
Yeah, and that's what happened with Mel Brooks' stuff. You know, I'm sure Mel Brooks, you know, when he was younger, loved the Universal Monster movies when he made Young Frankenstein.
Yeah,
granted, that man is like 120 years old, but I mean, he saw westerns, and I'm sure he liked.
He is now literally the 2,000-year-old man.
I mean. Oh, that's good. I mean, he looks good for Infinity, so.
Yeah. He's still kicking it, man.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, like, I think if you haven't seen Baby Driver yet, I at least give it a shot. I think it's a movie, whether you end up on Casey's side or Neil's side, I think it definitely serves you well to go see it in a theater.
Oh, yeah, because the sound design is great.
Sound design is great, and it's just like, the cinematography is really great. And I think
it's Bill Pope. You can't go wrong.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're on the fence, you're like, I don't know if I'd like it, you know, maybe consider a matinee or something.
Yeah. Either way, it is absolutely worth your time. regardless of where you come down on the spectrum of it, it is absolutely worth seeing.
I think you should find a quality online that somebody got from a camcorder.
Why do you say these things, Casey?
Like, Casey, would you say you regretted seeing Baby Driver?
I regret paying full price for it.
Wow, okay, fine. Okay, so matinee.
bad example, everybody. Bad example.
Fuck Casey, the end.
Actually, I think I might... Because I saw it in the afternoon, I'm not sure if they charge me full price or matinee for it. And that's the other thing. It's a bad sample size because I'm paying New York film prices for it.
That's true.
A matinee is $12.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, I paid $10, I think, for it. But if you can get it for like $5, $6, regardless of whether you're unsure about it, I would say go see it.
I think any movie is technically worth $6.
To even see on $5.
And that is how Neil spent $6 on Jack and Jill on Blu-ray.
Okay, so I was being nice and you were mean. So
anyway, that
he was drawn in by Dean Cundey as director of photography.
How do you mess that up? I'm just saying. How do you mess that up? How do you take arguably one of the finest, like most iconic cinematographers of our day, underrated? Underrated. But when it comes down to some of the best looking, most iconic films of our generation and previous generations, Dean Cundey's name is on there. How do you fuck that up?
Is this Jack and Jill?
Yes.
Yeah, he shot The Thing. And Jack and Jill.
Okay, well, who directed Jack and Jill?
Terrence Malick.
Terrence Malick.
I feel like if I tried to remember the name of that,
it's
of
probably
that director,
dude who's done
I'd
a bunch
die.
Of them.
Dennis Dugan.
Yeah, maybe. Probably.
Ugh, God. Just
so
how
there's
do you
your answer. It's Dennis Dugan.
God damn it.
So fuck him. Okay, moving on.
I'm That's, sad.
So that ends our little discussion on, little quote-unquote, discussion on Baby Driver. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back after this intermission, and we'll talk about Spider-Man Homecoming. Boy, howdy, what a fucking intermission that was. It was fucking great, wasn't it, gents?
Why did we watch all of The Godfather Part 2?
Because why wouldn't we, Casey?
It's true, it was a day that ends in Y, and per the grounds of my divorce, I have to watch a Godfather Part 2 on every day that ends in Y.
Speaking of divorces, Spider-Man Homecoming. Alright, so,
explain.
Yes. Well... It's kind of, like, I you could say that there's, like, a custody battle between Sony and Marvel, and so, like, they're, like, joint custody, like, they got divorced, and they're like, okay, well, you can visit Daddy Marvel for this weekend if they make this movie using you.
I mean, I figured that's what you were going to go with, but I just wanted to put you on the spot for a second.
Hey, man, I did okay.
Yeah, you did fine. You
did fine. I did 6.5 out of 10.
You were okay, I guess.
If you kind of grade it on a curve of our transitions and metaphors, you're doing really well.
Yeah, I am exceeding expectations.
You're in the same solar system.
So, yes, this is the latest Marvel movie, and it is it's not even the return of Marvel, of Spider-Man to Marvel Studios. It's the first one where Marvel has the rights now that they are a film studio. So, after, five previous Spider-Man movies, all of which I like to varying degrees. I mean, I would still say that Spider-Man 3 is the dumbest and worst, but...
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. That's my one thing that, like, I'm frustrated with this movie existing, is that it brings up all the whole, like, the past Spider-Man films are fucking garbage, and it's like... Well, you can just like them all. Like, I don't know. Like, I have a soft spot for the early Raimi ones.
Oh, yeah, you know? So do I. Mark Kermode had this really interesting video about the new Planet of the Apes movies where he was saying, apparently it's the new thing now to just say, like, yeah, those old Planet of the Apes movies are fucking trashy and shit. And he's like, hold on a second. You can enjoy the new ones without, like, resorting to trashing the old ones.
Yeah, I mean, you also should still be able to enjoy at least the first Planet of the Apes movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck you, the third's the best. I say as a man who watched 3 Planet of the Apes movies today.
But I'm just saying, like, that's the most famous one, blah, blah, blah. You know, I feel like if you're going to show someone any one of them, it's going to be that one.
That's the thing, it's coming up that I might show a friend a Planet of the Apes movie. I'm considering having it be the fourth one.
Which was, is that Battle?
No, that's Conquest.
Oh.
Fuck Battle. That's the...
I always get confused because they're kind of the same, like, word, like, Battle and Conquest.
They are the same exact title. They do the same thing. One of them does it way better than the other.
Okay. So I'm not wrong in getting them confused. I'm glad.
You're only wrong in that one of them is a really good movie that takes a sci-fi concept to talk about race relations in America, and it's a really neat way to do it. And the other one's about a bunch of drunk hicks from underneath a burned-out city going to fight some apes.
And they have the same fucking title.
But, sidebar on the Planet of the Apes movies, the thing I'm really appreciating now that I'm looking at the reboots and the original is that these aren't... Anyone who says these are prequels, that's wrong. They contradict the continuity, but they will also take scenes from the later Planet of the Apes movies and turn them on their head or do an inversion or create a variation to make them unique enough that they're not just straight up ripping it off. And it's interesting how they're able to use the imagery of, I don't know, Roddy McDowell's Caesar from Battle of the Planet of the Apes watching his son pass away and then taking that to have Andy Serkis's Caesar in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes seeing the birth of his son.
Mm-hmm.
There's a genuine genius in the Planet of the Apes franchise that I will go into on a 9-part series called Casey Likes Monkeys.
Casey loves monkeys.
Dude, why have we not have a King Kong Planet of the Apes crossover? Why do we live in a world where Donald Trump can be president and we do not have a King Kong Planet of the Apes crossover?
Speaking of crossover, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah. God damn it.
Hey, that worked. I did it.
Is it all right?
That was pretty good.
Again, grading on a curve, best we've ever had.
Yes.
All right, cool.
Okay, so, yes.
Glad we're on the same page.
So, I guess it's another Spider-Man reboot, but it does things differently. We don't have the Uncle Ben origin. I don't even think he's mentioned. Like, there's a little bit of hinting towards it, but he's not mentioned.
Yeah, he's not even mentioned. I think they don't even really hint at it that much either.
The closest is them talking about how much Aunt May is doing on her own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway.
Ben died. It's just on her own.
So essentially it's the full-fledged Spider-Man in high school movie, hence the title. It's one half of the double meaning of the title Spider-Man Homecoming, and we get to see, you know, Peter Parker still kind of growing into the role of Spider-Man, and after the events of Captain America Civil War, and basically we get to see how he kind of earns his stripes as he goes. So that's kind of the overall progression of the movie, if you will. I don't know if any of you guys want to take it away and continue the discussion.
I did a half-hearted job with Baby Driver, so someone else do it.
Casey, do you mind?
Spider-Man Homecoming is about about a man named Peter Parker who realizes
that he wants to fly.
Who realizes that he wants to fly, but he can't fly because he's part spider and spiders can't fly.
And he creates a teleporter. He wasn't bitten by a fly.
So he creates a teleporter, but he feels himself to fly. Honestly, I got bored when I was in the theater, and I had to fly on my phone, so I watched that instead.
Wow, what a rousing endorsement, Casey.
And it's like you said, it is a Spider-Man high school story that a bunch of people, myself neither included nor not included, always wanted to see.
I think for a lot of people it is like the Spider-Man they have always wanted to see. I don't know if I'd put myself in that camp. I'd like to think that like I'm open-minded to like various, I guess, quote-unquote interpretations of Spider-Man. Because I think Spider-Man, because of we're seeing basically a kid become an adult over the course of the whole comic, I think there's different interpretations you could apply to Spider-Man. It kind of in the way that Batman does, but Batman, it's always because Batman ran so long. It's not so much Batman grew up, you know, in front of readers, but it's just that he's been around for, you know, 70 plus years. So it's like there's the 50s Batman and the 60s Batman and the 80s Batman, etc. But I feel like there are ways you can, different interpretations you could apply to Spider-Man. And this one is very much like he's a young kid.
Is it there? Even though I do not care for Spider-Man 3, the interesting thing about that movie to me is that it's straight up making Peter Parker an adult, and it's saying, and even though that movie doesn't work, it's creating a springboard for where it can go from there. And on the flip side, Amazing Spider-Man 2, a movie most people dislike, we are three of the only, like, seven people in America who like
the movie. Yep, guilty as charged.
Yeah.
And I hope to see you guys at the reunion where everybody who likes Amazing Spider-Man 2 meets and watches it together. I think it's at Kyle's house out in Idaho this year, though, so I'm not sure I'm going to make it.
Well, actually, Casey, it's at a courthouse because we're being charged with bad taste in movies.
Hey, guys, I'm just throwing this out there. Have we considered... I threw a motion in last meeting about... Maybe we could like other things, too. Because going over and talking to each other about how much we like Amazing Spider-Man 2, and even, like, nobody's really that passionate about it. We just say we like it.
Really? It's decent.
Sort of like in the same way that we talk about getting gifts from our grandma, where we're just kind of like, oh, thanks, grandma, where you get, like, present face, and you talk about, like,
dude, my grandmother gives me hilarious cards. What does my grandmother give you that you don't like so much?
Well, my grandmother give you?
Well, both my grandmas are dead, so, you know.
Oh.
I knew it was going to get that reaction.
Casey.
I don't know.
That's why I said, what does my grandmother give you? I thought she gave you great presents.
No. But I just thought that we could talk about other movies that we like, you know?
And every year I suggest we watch Quadrophenia instead, and you give me a wedgie.
Yeah, and you've earned
the Quadrophenia references.
It really is 2011 Casey tonight.
I thought we were doing so well. Anyways, Amazing Spider-Man 2, go on ahead.
You mean Spider-Man Homecoming? Do we want to give that much attention to Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, I'll say it got the short end of a stick. It has a lot of flaws with it, but overall it does have a clear idea of what it wants its emotional core to be, and I think it knocks that part out of the park. But it did not work for most people. That resulted in another reboot, even though, again, it was putting Peter Parker in a position where he cannot go forward in any way except to grow a little bit older. And they've gone the exact opposite direction with this one. It's him as a high schooler, and it's fine. It's pretty good. I'm hoping they don't do this forever. I'm hoping that they try to stick pretty much in synchronicity with what's-his-face Tom Holland's age. And so by the time they get the next one ready, he'll be a senior. By the time they get the next one ready, he'll be in his mid-20s.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what I'd like to see, I guess we could just talk about where we want to see go from here, is like, our friend Thomas Mariani, I think, said it very well, where it's, I think, as just a standalone movie, it's like he said, it's, I think it's a very good movie. I think it's a very fun, you know, movie, but I don't think, I don't know if I'd say, because I know I said on Twitter, like, and I've been contemplating if there was a way I would rephrase it, but it's like, I don't think there's anything super standout-ish about Spider-Man Homecoming in terms of comparing it to the rest of the MCU. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, I would say, I don't know if I would say anything it does extraordinarily better than any other, like, Marvel MCU movie.
I think that in terms of other Spider-Man movies, like, I really love this Peter Parker.
Yes.
I really love this Peter Parker. I think that is, like, the best thing that this film has to offer. And I think it's probably the most consistent, I guess, of the other ones, even though, like, you know, it's got some trip falls here and there. But, I mean, like, it is a pretty consistent ride throughout.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, there's aside from that, there's nothing. There's a lot of things that a lot of the other Spider-Man films did better, at least to me.
What would you say are some examples of that?
An emotional core.
Okay.
I'm going to be honest. Like, okay, I really like this movie. I like it a lot. I can't say I love it because it's a really fun comedy.
Right.
It's a comedy. But it has no real stakes. I would say there are very few stakes and there's not really any emotional core. And this is going to be, I'm going to be that guy who says, maybe we should have alluded to Uncle Ben more. I don't necessarily want to see him dead, but you could at least show that that's there, like give Aunt May something else.
Right. Because that's, and that's why those should be, if you're going to use those, that's why you're, if you're going to use that or like Batman's parents dying in a Batman film, the intention should be to introduce an emotional core. You know, motivation, yeah. Something. And like,
exactly.
You know, yeah, Uncle Ben's been killed in three of these. or two of them.
But, I like to think that Uncle Ben is just in some prison cell somewhere, and then like the Sony execs just bring him out every once in a while. And it's like, it's time for you to die again, Uncle Ben. And he's like, no, please. And then like in the cell next to him are Thomas and Martha Wayne, who are like, you think you've got it bad, bitch boy? We've died like at least four times as many times as you have.
You know how many times my pearl necklace has been ruined?
There's times we die more than once in the same movie.
God, that yeah. One in Batman v Superman took fucking forever. It was all in slow motion.
Oh, fuck. My God. Yeah.
And you know what? My son stopped punching a guy because it turns out his mom had the same name. Like, what is that?
Who names their child Martha Batman? It's weird.
Hello. No, please. My father was Mr. Batman. Call me Bruce.
I'm going to start a new girl punk rock band called Martha Batman.
I think that's a good point, is that it is like, it instead of emotional core, just kind of charming. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's charming as fuck, yeah. But there's no emotional core to it. There's like, the only thing I could get close to is the scene where Peter is, you know, stuck underneath the rubble. And even then, I didn't catch that was a reference to a classic run of comics until you told me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that was alluding to something? I thought it was just a growth moment for him in the film. Which, to be fair, like when it's on its own, you don't know that.
Yeah, if you didn't know the context, the scene's fine. But I would argue that, and this is just me, obviously, but to me, as someone who knew about the significance of that scene that they're referencing in the comics, I felt like it was...
it's premature.
It's premature, and I think it was rushed a little bit.
Yeah, it's unearned.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's unearned. I mean, that seems a little too, like, brutal, but, like...
Okay, well, would you say that they're going on...
I would
on,
say it should have been saved for the next movie.
Okay, would you say that they're riding on other people knowing that scene and filling in, basically like they're borrowing emotions?
Well, I feel like, you know, I feel like this movie is very much written for people, for Spider-Man fans, for people who know everything. They don't need to be reminded about Uncle Ben. They know, you know?
Yeah.
And
which I always thought is kind of a terrible way to write a movie, because if you're familiar with my feelings on the Harry Potter films, which are basically, you know, oh, they'll know already. They've read the books. We're just writing mm-hmm. this for book readers. But people who go in to see the movies who haven't read the books, that was a very common complaint that I heard, which was I had no idea what was going on. Right. And you can blame that on people not paying attention as much as you want, which, to be fair, is a totally legit problem. But after a while, when it happens all the time, maybe it's bad screenwriting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to call them.
Did you see how many people wrote this movie? There was, like, so many credited screenwriters.
There are six writers on this
movie. God damn. Okay.
But it didn't have the same problem that a lot of movies with six
screenwriters. No, it doesn't, which is that's why it surprised me, is that for as good of a product as it is to have six screenwriters.
Marvel, I'm going to find a way to say this that doesn't make it sound like I'm just being a cynical douchebag. Marvel has returned to the old Hollywood assembly line way of making movies.
No, you're absolutely correct. There's no lie here.
Yeah, like people always talk about, like I'll have drinks with friends from college and they'll say, well, when's the last time you saw an actual movie that was a real movie? So you try to put down Marvel stuff. I'm not going to go that far. It's still they're still making fine movies.
Yeah.
But they're on assembly line, and the downside to that is even if they're all fine, this was down until you get to the third act, because this is the inverse of Baby Driver for me. I care a lot about the ending. Everything else I don't really care about. And the first two-thirds of it, I would say, felt somewhat unremarkable. Like, I was going, like, that's fine. Here's where this happens, and here's where the comic relief character says a thing. It will give some people a humor. It did not give me a humor. Whatever. We all die alone.
Wow, Casey. But I think that's the thing. It's
you can't eat pizza when you get it immediately, or you'll burn the roof of your mouth. And also, we're all gonna die. So
all we have is hope, which is dead.
anyway.
And I'm trying to think, I guess we should just, do we want to go into, like, a spoiler warning here? Because we do need to talk about, like, the villain, and I want to go more
into... Yeah, why the fuck not? Let's just put a spoiler warning in there. Let's do it.
Spoiler warning! Look at the timeline for when...
Hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah. So the villain is, the Vulture, played by, Michael Keaton. Who,
he's playing a different kind of bird man. Do you get it, guys? Literally every critic made that joke.
Oh, I thought it was a comparison because vultures tend to eat bats when they're in the wild, and he once played Batman in Batman Returns.
Why not? Let's go with that, too. I'll take it. It's like how when Childish Gambino's second album came out, everyone was like, Childish Gambino grows up. It's like, wow, I can see all of these different... all these stupid headlines.
Michael Keaton plays a villain who I know. I heard a lot of people going like, "Oh, he's like the best villain. He's the best Spider-Man villain. He's a great Marvel villain."
And he is Marvel's best villain. The same way you can praise a hill in Kansas.
Well, my whole argument is that I feel like we go through this with a lot of new Marvel movies. Where it's like, we did it with Ultron. We're like, oh, Ultron's a really good villain. And then we did it with, we even did it with Civil War, what's his face from,
Daniel Brühl.
Yeah, Daniel Brühl's character. I'm blanking on the character, on the comic character.
Zemo,
yeah. And it's like, in the end, it's like, oh shit, he's actually a pretty solid villain. And it's like, I feel like we keep, like, moving the goalposts for good Marvel villains. And it's like, guys, they've been making solid ones for a little while now, you know? It's just that we always, I feel like we just kind of glom onto the bad ones. Like, okay, you watch Doctor Strange, Mads Mikkelsen is okay, you know?
Well,
Mads Mikkelsen for the fact that his character has a point of view. And it's like, oh, when you think about it that way, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that I think that is the reason they're so bad. Well, not bad. They're so unremarkable. These movies are not just designed to be on their own. They're designed to be part of a franchise with the big Avenger stuff and then their own sequels and then their own spinoffs and then this character will show up here, yada, yada, yada. So when you're doing that, the character you're least likely to give the most attention to, rightfully so, will be the one who won't show up again, which is usually the villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why in Phase 1, the only villain that really got their own, like, a lot of detail and a lot of effort put in was Loki, because Loki had to show up again. Whereas, who was Jeff Bridges' character? Obadiah Stane,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he...
That's what you name a child when you just hate him before they...
Oh, but
that's what you name a child when you're, like, relatively certain they're going to turn out evil anyway.
Like, what's a real way to tell your child, like, fuck you before they're even born?
Well, I always argue, too, like, when it comes to villains and at least the Phase 1 stuff is... And really just any following origin story is that it's more... The conflict is less... external, more internal, you know, in several of them. Like, I would argue, I mean, like, Iron Man, for sure, Captain America, even something like Ant-Man. you know, it's a little more internal, the conflict about, like, them getting over their vices or changing their character, and that's the arc of the movie, and it's not so much a conflict with the villain. The villain's just kind of there for the big bad at the end, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I would definitely say, like, as weak of a villain as Obadiah Stane is, I certainly don't really see it as that much of a negative on Iron Man, because I still think Iron Man as a movie is a really, really solid, really quite great movie, you know, especially seeing what it kind of led to. And I think
it's the template.
It's the template, and I think so much of it is just on Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark,
It absolutely is.
Like, what was the entire movie improvised, pretty much, something like that?
I don't think it's the entire movie, but I know
an exorbitant amount of it was, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was rich. It wasn't a writer's strike movie, but the same, like, shadows looming over it, something like that.
And the fact that it's as good as it is.
Yeah, and that's Steven has actually told me, like, that movie is kind of his nightmare, where it's like you write all of this stuff, and then it just gets tossed aside, and it's like, let's just improvise it. He's like, oh, God, no. He has told me that's like his nightmare.
I just think of Dan Avidan's like, oh, God, please, God, yes! No.
And then you have Iron Man 2, where it just feels like they improvised it, and it's Iron Man 2.
Because at that point, they hadn't made a sequel, so they're like, oh, fuck.
Well, again, I want to say that one was another
writer's strike. Yeah, for sure. But, like, that's the thing, and, like, not to say that, like, bring it back to Spider-Man Homecoming, that Michael Keaton's Vulture is a bad villain, not at all, but I think he doesn't get interesting until the twist later in the movie, in, like, the second act, where we find out that he is the father of Peter's love interest. And it's like, oh, suddenly there's, like, this nice little added layer to it, you know? Because before it's just like, okay, he's a blue-collar guy, he's mad because...
He's mad because 99% of the supervillains are taking 1% of the wealth, and 1% of supervillains are taking 99% of the wealth.
Essentially, yeah. And of course, his origin has a weird plot hole where apparently Spider-Man Homecoming takes place 8 years after the Avengers, which is, I believe, set in 2012, so this is in 2020.
I caught that too. I was like,
it's very weird. Like, I caught that. I mean, it's not a big deal, but it is like a weird, like, really? Like,
well, especially since it's not supposed to take too long after Civil War, and Civil War, I think, firmly said 2016.
Right. Or 20, yeah. Yeah. Like, generally the movies take place the year they come out or something like that.
So unless Peter Parker has been a freshman in high school for 4 years.
Or if they're
and this is fucking Saved by the Bell.
Or if they're just going by the timeline of when the first Iron Man movie came out, which was 2008, 8 years to 2016, which would be about right. So maybe they're just going like that.
In which case, Iron Man, Iron Man 2, and the Avengers all took place in the same year.
I didn't say it had to make sense.
Well, this is such an odd problem, because it's something that you could fix by... you can hit backspace, type 6 instead of 8.
Okay, well, I was telling you facts, and I feel very attacked right now, so.
I'm kidding. But yeah, like, Casey's right. It's like, it's such an easy thing to fix. It's like a typo in, like, a title card. Like,
that's kind of what it feels like to me.
That's what it is, really. It's what it feels like.
It's a mild enough thing that's just so... Like, I feel like we're even being too mean to it. Just more bizarre than anything else.
But yeah, it's not like a deal breaker. We're not like, fuck Spider-Man Homecoming because their math is wrong.
Let me put it to you this way. If this was a deal breaker for you, maybe movies aren't for you.
I prefer the machinations of Dada. Thank you.
I think if there's one scene... in the movie that encapsulates all of my problems with it, it's the scene where, spoiler alert, just kidding, we put that back there like 15 minutes ago. It's the scene where Michael Keaton kills his coworker by vaporizing him.
Yeah, the guy who shocked her.
Yeah, the shocker. Tom Hardy Light.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Logan Marshall Green and Tom Hardy look exactly the fucking same.
Is that Logan Marshall Green?
It's Logan Marshall Green.
Oh my god, I thought so. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's him. It's him. Yeah. That's a scene that should be in any... I don't want to say in any responsible screenplay, because Spider-Man Home... Okay, I get very frustrated with parts of Spider-Man Homecoming. Anytime that I get to sound like I'm harsh on it, it's because I care.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing by any
means. Because
you see the good
in the movie, and you want it to be, like, that much better.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, maybe this is something that we could learn from, which they don't listen to us. Why the fuck would they?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just things that I think are different. Okay, in any responsible screenplay, especially, like, okay, so think back to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Right.
Okay, the shoe in the acid scene.
Mm-hmm.
This could have been that scene.
Yeah.
This would be the scene that shows you what this villain is capable of. It's supposed to strike the fear of God into you to give you stakes to say, oh, this guy is not someone we should be messing with.
Right.
It shows you, it implants stakes.
Yeah.
And instead, it's played off as a joke. Which, to be fair, when that happened in the movie, I was like, oh, shit. Like, they really killed that guy. They vaporized him, like, pretty graphically in a PG-13 movie. And then the movie's just like, wasn't that funny? And I was like, no, not really, but okay. I mean, it was a funny joke, but the movie's like, hey,
I know.
Death. And I'm like,
you're just, like,
really.
Nervous laughing, like, oh, right?
I know. Yeah, I'll defend it in that they didn't want to give him a high-stakes villain. One of the best scenes you can say about it is in the ending there, it's not a world-ending cataclysmic event. It's a guy who's selling...
No, and I love that. And I'm not saying, like, he needs to be, like, I'm going to take over the world or something, but it's to give it more of a threat, I guess. Not saying it needs to be high stakes, but there's a difference between, like, a giant fucking blue laser shooting into the sky and someone who's just like, I'm just kind of a mild inconvenience rather than a real threat to our character.
Like, I'm just kind of robbing stuff. I'm not necessarily a huge threat to people, to innocent
people. But even then, if you want to add some more depth to the character, what if it could be like, he really didn't mean to kill the guy and it upsets him. And it kind of makes him question, like, you know, he's finally getting his hands dirty. Is this really what I want to do? And, like, it affects him throughout the rest of the film. You can actually have, like, a dilemma with him, make him more interesting. And those are two – I feel like those are two interesting ways that you could go – like, those are two interesting crossroads, intersections.
Well, and I think that's why, like, when we learn that he's the dad of the love interest, that suddenly there's, like, this added, you know, layer to it, and it becomes much more complex and interesting. And I think we get a taste of what you're talking about, I think, in the scene where it's him and Peter in the car.
Yeah, but even then, that could happen earlier.
Yeah, for sure.
My problem is that they wait too long to do that. That scene is great. That is arguably one of the best scenes in the film because there's stakes, there's tension.
Mm-hmm.
And in a film that is so tension and stake free, that scene really stands out because it's like, oh shit, there's stuff that could actually happen as a result of this.
Well, and they're able to do it so effortlessly in that scene. It's not a huge buildup. It's a guy reaches into his glove compartment and pulls out a gun.
The dialogue is really good in that scene.
Yeah, and and you believe that. Like, we all know that the guy is like, hey, you know, I love my family. I would kill for him, and probably has a gun in their compartments.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Hell, you live in Georgia, and one of you is moving to Georgia. I guarantee you, you're within 40 feet, you'll see someone.
It's not as common down here as you'd think.
Yeah, like, I would say, like, in terms of tension, they just kind of, they come in spurts, and they're just kind of the moment. Tension.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like the elevator or the boat sinking. And on one hand, I'm like, that's interesting because then the conflict is just Peter Parker saving people, you know? And that's why,
which is
like,
good. He should be doing that.
Which is good. And I like, that's something that, because there's also, I guess, I'm on the fence of whether I see it as an actual criticism or if it's, like, kind of a good thing, is, like, there's not really, like, a huge centerpiece action sequence, like, I would say. Like, there are...
That's fine with me, yeah.
And it's fine, but it's also, like, it would be great if there was just, like, a little extra oomph to, like, one of them to kind of stand out or something. You know what I mean?
I also do not disagree with that either. I think I'm in the position of, like, it's fine, but I wish they had done something more.
Right. But at the same time, I appreciate the fact that, like, it's always Peter Parker, like, his motives are saving people. He just wants to be a hero. He looks up to the Avengers. He saw how much they saved people. You know, he was in New York City, I'm assuming, when the Avengers took place. So
apparently,
sure.
There's a new thing that they're saying retroactively. The kid who tried to stand up to the robots in Iron Man 2 was Peter Parker.
Oh, fuck that!
I don't buy that. I don't buy that shit.
Like, you know the one you don't want to talk about though. Like in the Iron Man mask.
In which movie?
Yeah, no.
In Iron Man 2.
Oh, that would require me watching Iron Man 2 again. Fuck that.
I've literally only ever watched Iron Man 2 once, and I was like, I'm fine.
Yeah. I think I'm the same way.
I liked it. I don't have any desire to ever rewatch it.
Yeah. I've watched many other Marvel movies many times and have not gone back to Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
But, like, I like that. Like, that's why, like, the character of Peter Parker is such a great core of the movie, but like Neil said, you don't have that big emotional core outside of him. Like, you know, you kind of did need something that, like, an Uncle Ben type, you know, even just a little thing, you know, like just little hints, little visual cues of like, oh, here's a picture of him or something like that. Because then back to the whole point about, like, it's made for the people who are aware of the comic and know everything about the comic. It's made for the fans, essentially. And
which is becoming, like, my least favorite defense of anything now.
Which is also, like, just, like, it's a tough rope to walk, you know, it's a tough line to tread. Because, you know, yeah, you're going to get people, like, I know people who just, like, love, like, all the beats hit for them because they're big Spider-Man fans. And it's like, I can't take that away from them. I totally get it. But at the same time, you know, that's when I guess I can transition into the... where he's trapped under the rubble after he kind of corners he confronts the Vulture in his, like, warehouse. Vulture sets off a bomb. The roof collapses in on Peter. He's stuck under it. So they're referencing a classic, probably regarded as one of the best Spider-Man moments in the original Stan Lee, Steve Ditko run in the 60s. And they, in my opinion, like I said earlier, I feel like it's premature and kind of, it's like you're blowing your load a little early here, not to be too crude, but you know what I mean.
I mean, teenage, like, boys do it all the time, so why
not? Yeah, so I guess it's relevant in that case. But, like, and I feel like if they were gonna do it, I wish they did more with it, because I feel like it's like, oh no, Peter's trapped, and then, like, 30 seconds later he's saved. And it's like, okay, well, that was great, and then he leaves. And it's like, I get what you're going for, but I think that too kind of misses that oomph to it. Because in the context of the comics...
Yeah, explain the comic part.
So in the original comic, it's like Peter's in college. It's a pretty, like, landmark turning point in the book, because, like, Harry Osborn gets introduced, Gwen Stacy gets introduced, Peter goes to college, all that stuff. Mary Jane's a prominent character already. But so there's, like, a criminal mastermind called the Master Planner, right? And he's doing all these things, committing all these crimes. Spider-Man's trying to stop him. But at the same time, you have Aunt May is dying, you know, as she is wont to do.
Why can't old people just stop dying everywhere?
Why she just gotta die so fucking... I swear to God, Aunt May's, like, almost died or has died, like, 10, 12 times in the comics.
I think at this point, Aunt May is just like, please just let me go. It's just...
just let me go! Well, that was what... You had to go too off topic, but, like, one more day, the infamous one more day where Peter Parker gives up his marriage to save his aunt. Yes, that I did not misspeak there. That's a perfect example of, like, thing. Peter, just fucking let Aunt May die. She's, like, 97. Just stay married to MJ. Let Aunt May die. It's probably what she'd want. But no, we have to... It's kind of what Casey brought up about how with rebooting Spider-Man, we're kind of just rewinding and eliminating any chance of development. Where that's what One More Day was. It's like, okay, well, he's a married man. You know, he's got all these adult problems. Let's just go back to when he was single, blah, 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 blah. And that's what the whole retcon of that was. So, but in the original comics, so Aunt May's dying. And in, you know, of course, the Master Planner has the antidote or whatever, the cure for what is, cure for what ails her. And Spider-Man needs to go and get it. And so...
Hemorrhoid cream.
It is. It's Preparation H. So, long story short, like, while this is going on, it's like Peter Parker's becoming, you know, an adult. This is like issue 33 of the original run, I believe. He's an adult. There's all these responsibilities going on. He's got his love life. He's got his job at the Daily Bugle, and all this stuff. In his last remaining relative is dying, and then he gets crushed and like he's piled under this, and it's just like you can look up all the pages, and like just like it's also a great example of like great comic book storytelling because just like the positioning of Peter. Like he doesn't just, like, lift it up and it's, like, one panel. It's, like, 2.5 pages of him just, like, mustering the determination to, like, just... It's just sheer willpower to lift this shit off of him, beat the Master Planner, and save his aunt. And I think that with that context gone, you know, like, it's, like I said, it's something that should have been saved. You know, have Aunt May or someone, whoever, Ned, I don't care, be at stake. And because it's a stakes problem is that, you know, it's him lifting the thing. It's like, yeah, I get it that he's like kind of trans. It's kind of his arc is that, oh, he's becoming a man. You know, he's growing up. This is something that me and Steven talked about a little bit. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, and I get where he's coming from, but I don't necessarily agree with him. I respectfully disagree. Or I don't think they were very successful in doing it, where it's like, his argument was that it was more about him growing up and like, you know, he starts the scene, he's like whining for help, and then he decides like, I'm going to be proactive and be the man and save myself. And it's like, yeah, that's all well and good. But if you're going to reference that scene from the comics, which has all this real emotional weight to it, which is why it's so well remembered, it just feels like a waste to use it here. We're using it, just, okay, Peter's got to get a thing out, and he's got to go stop this dude from robbing Tony Stark. You know? Yeah. So it just feels like a weird place to use it.
Yeah.
And
no, I see both of where you're coming from. I think that in the context of the film on its own, it works fine, but when you know what it's trying to do, you can't help but wish for something better.
Right, exactly. It's kind of like, well, it's a lot like, you know,
so
Iron
like,
Man
I'm not
2.
Gonna, so it's not, it's like, I'm not going to peg it for it, but I am going to go like, I'm not mad, I'm just a little disappointed.
Well, yeah, and that's basically me. Like, when I was watching, I'm like, really, they're doing this? All right, well,
yeah,
all right, you know, kind of thing. It's kind of like when Iron Man 2, to get back to Iron Man 2, is when they did Demon in the Bottle, which is a pretty well-known Tony Stark deals with his alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So,
yeah.
And I feel like they whiffed on that too. So, but they've gotten better in recent years, but with stuff like Civil War and actually improving Civil War, the comic.
Yeah.
yeah. So.
Yeah. No. I know it sounds like we're being harsh on this movie, but it's because we care. But also, that's just my biggest thing is like the more I've thought about it, the more I'm like, you know what? I was telling Steven as we were leaving the theater, I said to him, I would be very curious how this movie holds up in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because it feels like a very 2017 movie.
Right. I do like a lot of the aesthetic of it. Like I do like kind of. I love some of the posters they're releasing where it's like it's the Breakfast Club but the cast of this movie and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah,
I remember telling Casey like I actually enjoyed that they were able to use a movie like Blitzkrieg Bop and it wasn't super trite.
Yeah, that's fair.
I thought it was kind of trite.
I know you thought it was kind of trite, but we both agreed that we liked it.
That's like really random thing, and it goes back to what we're saying about, or what I was saying with the assembly line process of this. It takes things I kind of dig or really like and turns them into meh. Like, it uses an esoteric Rolling Stone song, Blitzkrieg Bop, and a handful of other classic rock songs, and I was lukewarm every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, I don't want to say the movie felt insincere or artificial with it, but it did not resonate to the same level it wanted, clearly wanted.
Did it feel like it was trying too hard?
Maybe. It felt like a product.
Yeah,
no, it feels like a product to me, too. But then again, most Marvel movies feel like products. There are a few exceptions where it doesn't feel like one. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 did not feel like a product. It felt like a film.
Which I would argue that's another good example of a villain in a Marvel movie. And I remember when that movie came out, people
But
Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I can straight up say that movie is about something. It's about Star-Lord gaining and losing his father.
Right.
And all the different ways that sentence can be applied to this movie. But this, I'm not entirely sure I can say was about anything besides Peter Parker.
I don't mind necessarily that it's not about anything. Because I know there are some people who were criticizing it, saying, like, superhero movies are usually about something like a social issue or something. It's like, not really. Not always.
They
can be, but they don't have to be. And to say that most of them are is disingenuous on the point of being like, I think you're lying. Mm-hmm. So to peg Spider-Man Homecoming for that is stupid. And once again, disingenuous, and I think you're lying.
Right.
But, because, I mean, like, what social issues is Guardians of the Galaxy 2 commenting on? What social issues is Deadpool
commenting on? Raccoon treatment in America.
Sure, we'll go with that. What, I mean, like Wonder Woman comments on, like, sexism and whatnot, but, I mean, like, is it really about something more than that? Is that the overarching theme throughout the film that the film keeps coming back to? Would you say that the backbone of the film is overcoming sexism, or would you just say like it's a good origin story?
Because it's a good origin story with themes about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I wouldn't
it's woven
say
in.
Or it's or
but I wouldn't that's... say that's the point of the movie.
No, I mean
exactly.
It's a feminist movie, but you don't have to have feminism be like the main theme of the movie to be a feminist.
You know, if that movie has a main theme, it's about doing the right thing despite without any question of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about doing. Yeah, it's exactly. But to criticize a comic book movie for not being about something like socially or whatnot is stupid. But to say that there's no sort of greater point that it wants to make is fair. Like
I think that's where it kind of gets to my larger point where it feels like a great setting of foundation.
Yes.
And I'm interested in seeing a sequel. Like,
no, I am absolutely very much so looking forward to what they have to do with this because it feels like a Marvel origin story without the actual origin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they went to bypass all the Uncle Ben stuff.
Which I think was a mistake, but hey. Disney has all of, like, how many of these screenwriters on hand that they could, you know, they're creative people. They can figure out a way to do that. It's not hard. I mean, okay, it's hard, but that's what they excel at.
Right, but that's what they're paid to do.
Can I use Wonder Woman as an example for contrast on this?
Go ahead, man.
Casey, that's ridiculous.
No, like, Casey, we're talking about Spider-Man.
What we're talking about with like the emotional core, it doesn't need to be watching Uncle Ben get murdered for the 80th time. Like in Wonder Woman, the moment I got invested in that movie is seeing young Diana like up on top of a building, and she's pretending to fight. Emma was like, well, I'm in. Like,
yeah, it's cute.
It's cute, it's visually interesting, and it gives you an emotional way to connect to a character.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think that's why, like, we bring up Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2, is that, you know, I feel like that's kind of what Spider-Man Homecoming should have probably used as a template, because those are essentially comedies, but there's such a huge emotional core to those movies.
Yeah.
You know, like, arguably the most emotional core to any Marvel movie is in those two movies.
Yeah.
In terms of their themes of family and loss and all kinds of shit like that. So, yeah. But they're also super, super fucking funny. So,
there's
a balance, and I hope that, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming, which, again, to reiterate, I think is a very good movie.
Yeah, we all really liked it.
Do you guys remember the Silicon Valley episode where Dinesh and Rich want to talk shit about Richard, and they come up with the phrase Rigby because Richard's a great guy, but, you know, that's kind of what we're at with that. Like, Spider-Man Homecoming's pretty good, but...
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you need to have Uncle Ben die specifically as the emotional core, but it gives it something, and that's something that I was trying to say, like, in their haste to get rid of that and just, like, we're not even going to touch on it. It's like, well, getting rid of it completely is not the answer. We just don't want to have to go through that whole song and dance again, but you can easily allude to it, or you can find creative ways to incorporate that. I just don't feel like going through that whole song and dance again, but that doesn't mean I want it completely gone.
Right. And I feel like there was, like, a
I want
there
you here,
with...
but I also want you not here. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Because I feel like they were kind of trying with, like, Tony Stark to kind of have a bit of that emotional thing, like, you know, when Peter loses his suit, you know, like...
And to be fair, that's a good scene.
It's a good scene.
It's two characters written very believably that feel like their respective characters and how they would actually interact. Like, the way that Tony is just like, you know, this is where you zip it. You know, the grown-up is talking. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds like him.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I should note that the people who, like, three of the people that wrote this movie were the people behind Horrible Bosses.
Oh.
Huh.
One of them being... oh, God, what's his name? From Freaks and Geeks?
Oh, the main kid from Freaks and Geeks?
Yeah, he was one of the people that wrote this movie.
Oh, okay.
James Franco wrote this movie?
Get out of here.
But stop. I thought he was Spider-Man 3 villain.
Well, it does star that other guy from Freaks and Geeks as the debate.
Martin Starr.
Yeah, Martin Starr.
Yeah, I like to think that there was a reason he showed up. I'm always just happy to see Martin Starr in
it. Which is bizarre, because when you're a fan of Silicon Valley and you're so used to Guilfoyle... And then you see him in this, and you're like, he, like, has, like, you know, cadence to his voice. What the fuck?
Exactly.
So, okay.
Sorry.
So, I guess we can start wrapping it up. We probably should, maybe we should end on our positives, because we've been so negative.
Sure. Okay.
I want to complain about one more thing.
Why not?
Casey.
This is a nitpick. It's something that should not have any bearing on my view of the movie. But at a point, he needs to stop a gang gun trade-off. And they're selling guns on a boat, on a ferry that's heavily populated and going to Staten Island. Why would you ever do something illegal on a place you can't get out of for 45 minutes? Because if shit goes south, like it fucking does, they have nowhere to run.
That's a good point. Also, another thing, Donald Glover.
Donald Glover. Point made, moving on.
I also love him.
He's good in the movie. I don't think you need him. I know exactly why he's there, and I don't appreciate it.
That is something else. I'm right there with you. Because there are moments, especially when he says, I got a nephew in that neighborhood. I am wondering why he chose to channel Hayden Christensen in Revenge of the Sith.
Wait, who is this again?
Donald Glover.
Oh, yeah. He's
something.
I enjoyed him being in there. He's really funny in the movie, and his scenes are good. But if you took him out of the screenplay, What changes? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing changes.
Compliment,
and I have a feeling that it's just set up, you know, quite
well,
frankly.
Well, I guess that's my bigger problem with Marvel films is that I know I just keep adding more things, but I guess that's my big thing is another thing that comes down to writing for the Marvel films is that Marvel movies seem to be very bad at combining plot progression with world building.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can find ways to incorporate these people in here and still have them be kernels of things that will happen later. But it doesn't have to be like, oh, well, we just threw this guy in here because he's going to show up sometime later. Yeah, but if you took him out, you know, there's no point. There's no point for him being there. It's another thing about, like, you know, you pay these screenwriters. This is what they're supposed to do. And, like, this is what you come up with. What the fuck, guys?
That's a great positive, Neil.
Also, the cinematography was some bullshit.
Oh.
It was just very bland. It's another thing about coverage and whatnot, where it's just like, well, we want to make sure we get all possible angles, but, like, none of them are particularly well composed. There's no real, like, creative shots or anything. It's just very serviceable. And it sucks because, like, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I know that we're going to keep talking about Guardians of the Galaxy 2 because it's the other Marvel movie that's come out, but it's, like, superior in most ways. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 has some misses, but also it's a gorgeous-looking movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is a really visually creative movie. Like, hell, like, Doctor Strange, you know, you have Ben Davis, who's a great cinematographer, working on that one. That's a really creatively shot film. And I want to say that Spider-Man 2 kind of goes into the echelons of, like, Thor the Dark World in terms of movies that are just, like, really uninterestingly shot.
You mean, like, Spider-Man Homecoming?
It joins, like, Thor the Dark World in terms of, like, movies that are just, like, I'm just not impressed with the cinematography. This does not feel... I don't know what they were trying to go for. It doesn't feel like a John Hughes film, like, cinematography-wise, because those were good at, like, minimal set. Like, those were good at framing and telling your story, your characters through framing. Like, John Hughes worked with Tak Fujimoto, who is one of my favorite cinematographers. Like, he worked with him a lot, and it shows. Like, that stuff is great-looking. It doesn't feel like a comic book. It's like, I don't know what they're trying to go for. It just feels like below indie fare.
Right.
It's just not creative, and it bummed me out.
Okay, can we talk about the positives?
Yes, it is as much as I complain about Donald Glover's part in this movie, he is genuinely good. I enjoy his performance.
I would say pretty much all the performances are pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah, all the performances. Zendaya as Michelle.
As MJ.
please don't remind me. Don't remind me of that. I got so pissed when they pulled that. Not because I dislike her. I like her just fine. It's just that same, like, it's the thing that I was afraid that they were going to do with Donald Glover's character, which is, like, to have him just show up and be like, yeah, hey, what's your name? I gotta go talk to my nephew Miles, and all the audience goes like, oh, I get it, and they pat themselves on the back. It's like, if we don't know who this is, that means jack shit to us. It's a Star Trek Into Darkness Khan moment, you know, where Benedict Cumberbatch reveals that his true name is Khan, which is cool for the Trekkies, and then that's it.
It's not cool for the Trekkies. Do not lump me in with that.
Well, okay, but what I'm getting at is for people who are like, I recognize that. That's cool for them, possibly.
That's
but
a reference I get. Captain America and the Avengers.
It's like, I get that reference. But to anyone else who is unfamiliar with that, it's like a fart in an elevator. It's like, okay, so? Like, why is this a big deal? So when they did that with MJ, also, I don't get that thing either. She's like, I don't have friends. Like, my friends call me MJ. I thought you didn't have any friends. Well, I didn't. It's like, then how did you come up with that? That's a dumb line. I'm sorry. That's a stupid line.
God damn it, Neil. Stick to fucking positives.
Neil, I can tell you what they were doing there. They wanted her to be Ally Sheedy from The Breakfast Club, so they made her channel Ally Sheedy from The Breakfast Club.
Which is funny because I'm pretty sure in the poster parody of The Breakfast Club, she's in the same position as Ally Sheedy.
Oh, that probably is. But I don't know.
Me, attention when she doesn't have the attention so she can look at all the other people. Ally Sheedy from The Breakfast Club isn't as Ally Sheedy from The Breakfast Club enough to be out.
Okay, can we fucking seriously do some positives?
Okay, fine. Okay.
I really like that. Everyone, what we're complaining about, it actually does not stop at the movie usually in order to create connections for other movies.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so the acting's really good.
Yes.
Okay. Continue, please.
It's really funny. It's okay. Briskly, it's really well-paced, it does not lag, it is, I don't know, these all sound like things that are like, yeah, that's great, a movie should be that, but like, no, like, it genuinely is really, really funny. It was probably one of the funniest movies I've seen all year, and yeah, no, like, it's genuinely worth looking at. It's a great starting point, and like, it is... I'm not going to say, like, oh, it feels like they finally got Spider-Man. It feels like a Spider-Man that's going to be the least controversial. Because, like, right. Raimi's Spider-Man films have their things that, you know, it depends on where you fall on that spectrum of whether you're going to be okay with that or not. I was okay with it. Some people weren't. Admittedly, they are really, really cheesy, and it makes them really hard to look at through our modern gaze. Because, like, hell, like, the first one, like, Spider-Man, the first one came out in 2002. That's 15 years ago. It's 15 years old. Filmmaking has changed so much since then.
Largely because of that movie, ironically.
Largely because of that movie, funny enough. Let's see, like, Amazing Spider-Man was a series that could never seem to justify its own existence. And seemed like a thoroughly confused series that... Like I said, it couldn't justify its own existence.
There's definitely high highs and low lows in those two movies.
Yeah, exactly. But this one is like, okay, awesome. Like, I love, love, love Tom Holland as Peter Parker. He is great. He embodies Peter Parker. He is Peter Parker as far as I'm concerned. Like, he feels like a 15-year-old kid. Who he just feels like Peter Parker to me, and that's the best thing I can say. And that sounds like, oh, the best thing I can say is he feels like Peter Parker. That is genuinely the best thing I can say, and I mean that in the best possible way. He feels like a real life breathing Peter Parker.
Yeah,
and I would say he is absolutely like the highlight of the film. Also, I really enjoyed the way that they incorporated Iron Man into this. He actually figured into the plot rather than just being like an obligatory world building thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, exactly.
Also, can we talk about those Captain America videos?
Yes.
Those were the best thing in the film for me. Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh my God. What else is there to say besides they're amazing? Holy shit.
That's why like I had to. I couldn't necessarily disagree when I saw the headline of, like Spider-Man Homecoming has the best after-credit sequence. It's like,
oh, my God. I mean, like
yeah, probably.
I mean, it's disappointing in the best possible way. Yeah. It's disappointing in, like, a, oh, that was worth it way, and not disappointing in the Avengers 2 post-credit scene, which is literally Thanos, like, locking up his gauntlet, like, I've got to do it myself, which is like, wow, that doesn't show me anything I didn't already know was coming. That didn't add anything. Fuck you, Joss Whedon.
And to bring back the Guardians of the Galaxy comparison, I think that movie actually has a pretty great world-building teaser, which is when we have, like, you know, the gold people.
Which
race.
One? They had seven.
The one that actually, like, matters. Not the one
yeah,
where, like...
Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Well,
and that's
even
cool.
That, I wasn't sure if you were talking about that or the Sly Stallone one.
No. Not that one. It's the one with the gold people and, like, the casket cocoon thing.
Yeah, with
like,
Adam.
Oh, like... And, like, and I like how it's vague enough that, like, if you didn't know, you're just like, oh, what is that, you know? But if you did know, if you're familiar with Infinity Wars and Infinity Gauntlet, you're like, oh, okay. So
also,
I think
it also helps that scene is, like, really strikingly shot, too. So
yes,
it has that, like, visually, genuine intrigue to it.
Yeah. And so it's great that we kind of get the best of both worlds with the two Marvel movies of the summer. We get a really decently made world-building one at the end of Guardians 2, and then we get this great, hilarious, funny one at the end of Spider-Man, which fits Spider-Man. And I also really like the end credits. I thought that was great.
Oh, yeah, those are good. I mean, they're not indicative of the film, like any of the film that came before it, because those credits are like visually interesting and really like dynamic. And the cinematography for Spider-Man Homecoming is a bit of a letdown.
Spider-Man Homecoming sucks balls, 7 out of 10.
I'm gonna look up.
Hot take. I'm pretty okay with us being negative about it because this movie's getting pretty damn universal praise.
We're like, contrarians.
Yeah, I am okay being the stock contrarian on this.
Yes, we know, yeah. Mister. I think Edgar Wright's overrated, and I think Hot Fuzz is garbage. We know.
Thank you for admitting Hot Fuzz is garbage. It makes my life so much easier.
I was just quoting you. I have you on tape saying it's pretty good.
Salvatore Totino, the guy who did the cinematography for Spider-Man Homecoming, also did the cinematography to Frost Nixon, Casey.
Oh, are you fucking kidding me?
Da Vinci Code, Cinderella Man, Angels and Demons, Inferno, Concussion, Everest.
I want to go back to Frost
Nixon.
Well,
like two of those are good, I guess.
No, let me talk about the cinematography to Frost fucking Nixon. That is a great shot movie. Because it's able to take... Because the entire conflict of that movie is two people sitting in chairs on opposite sides of the room looking at each other and saying words. And they shot it like a boxing match.
Yes, yeah. It's appropriate that he also shot Cinderella Man. Which is a shame, because like all of these are like really good-looking movies. Like, I mean, the Da Vinci Code is garbage, but the cinematography is really nice.
Inferno's probably trash.
I can't overestimate how garbage the Da Vinci Code is.
And yet it's probably the best of the three.
Well, Angels and Demons was good.
It was?
Really?
Yeah.
Was Inferno. Yeah, did you see Inferno?
No.
Okay.
I'll check it out. Apparently it's the only one with an actual sense of humor.
Thanks, Dr. Steve Brule. You'll check it out.
Yeah.
Hey, does your milk say sour? Check your expiration date, you dummy. For real. All right. Anyway. Okay.
Now I'm just sad. This is another Dean Cundey moment. We're just like, Salvatore Totino, what are you doing, buddy?
Anyway, Spider-Man Homecoming. Neil, what would be your arbitrary number grade for Spider-Man Homecoming?
I'd give it like a 7 out of 5, or 7.5, or 8 out of 10. Yeah, I know. Okay, I fucked up. Haha. I would probably... I'd give it between a 7.5 and an 8 out of 10. Like, it's really, like, it is highly enjoyable. Really, it's, Marvel should pat themselves on the back. They did a good job with this one. I look forward to seeing what they bring with us next. And please, 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 for the love of God, let Thor 3 be great.
I'm excited about Thor 3, which is the first time I've said that about a Thor movie.
Yeah, exactly. Remember when we went and saw Thor 1 in Savannah, and we didn't get it in 3D, we got it in 2D, and then they put us in literally the smallest theater they got, and I still believe that they were punishing us for not paying to see it in 3D.
You didn't pay extra to the dungeon for you!
It was a glorified television set. It really was, though. It was probably like a 4K TV.
But it also sounds like the 3D sucked ass, so I can't complain too much.
It was post-product. It was post-converted, so who fucking cares?
It should be fair, so was Avenger 1 3D, and apparently that's great.
I didn't see it in 3D.
I've heard good things about the 3D on that one.
It's good. It makes me happy.
Casey, what is your arbitrary number grade for Spider-Man Homecoming?
Somewhere between a 7 and 8. It's like Neil said, this is...
Like, we're all going to sound like vastly different opinions, but we're all probably going to give it about the same rating.
This is
Marvels.
Like,
your Marvels. Suck my dick. 7.5, 8 out of 10.
11 out of 10, fuck it.
It's like looking at a building that is in no danger of falling over because it's very structurally sound and everything there is intentional. But the color scheme is not your cup of tea whatsoever. I I respect it. I think that they focus grouped their way to a very satisfying movie. And I do like there are specific things about it I like. I'm really glad that this movie spends approximately 3 minutes overall in Manhattan, and the rest of the time he's just out in the middle of nowhere. Like, he goes out to fucking suburbs. He's in Queens for most of it. He goes up Brooklyn. He goes out to Staten Island. He spends most of it on Coney Island until which, side note, he crashed a plane on Coney Island. A lot of people died.
Right.
That is a good point. I guess a lot of people did die as a result of that.
Yeah.
Glad that they didn't invoke too much 9/11 imagery. That was nice.
Yeah,
I'm glad that Peter Parker didn't make out with MJ on the rubbles and smoldering ashes of dead people.
Yeah, it's not good enough.
Real American hero, everybody.
You know, guys, if nothing else, we now live in a world where we can have a movie's climax be an airplane being flown towards New York City, and it's not horrifying.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we live in that world again.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right.
All right, so, yeah, I'm pretty much going to echo most of what you guys said. I'd probably give it an 8 out of 10. That's my arbitrary rating. I would probably – it's weird because I do feel like I'm a little more positive on the movie than you guys, but I don't know. Maybe I just didn't list as many flaws. But like I've said several times –
it's good to have foils.
Sure.
That's why I have several brands of foil in my kitchen.
I like that Weird Al song, Foil. we're basically, yeah, like, it is definitely a flawed movie, but I'm definitely glad it exists. I think it's
I'm happy it exists.
It's a nice stepping stone to hopefully improved sequels. I like the characters. I think, again, Tom Holland. Like, and I was, like, wary of Tom Holland because, like, I liked him in Civil War, but I was worried that he was just going to be, like, gee whiz, oh my god, like, the whole fucking movie, but he isn't. Like, they actually mellow him out, and he's way more down to earth, and I really like it.
See, I remember him from that movie, The Impossible, with Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts,
right?
And, like, he was a kid who, like he held his ground against Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts, and he is easily, like, one of the best performances in that movie, and when they said that he was going to be playing Spider-Man, I was like, oh, fuck, we're in for something.
Well, and I know he was, in a movie recently, like he's doing like period pieces now. Like, he's in that one where it's is it Charlie Hunnam from Pacific Rim in that, and King Arthur?
It might be Charlie Hunnam.
The Lost City of Zed?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, I saw that.
Was he good in that? I know he wasn't in it very much, but
I'm trying to remember which one he was. He was the son.
He was the son of.
Well, yeah, but the guy had multiple sons.
Okay. Well, he's like,
too many sons.
Too many sons.
Too many sons.
City of Zed. City of Zed.
Too many sons, so we let one get eaten.
City of Zed. I believe he's in that one, yeah.
Yeah, he plays like at some point one of Charlie Hunnam's sons.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool.
I think he's the one who like goes out to jungle with him and they never get seen again, Blair Witch style.
He's in the corner.
No, because that's the thing, the movie tries to be mystical. It's like, and he was never seen again. They believe he found the city and lived there the remainder of his days. When in reality, it's like, yeah, he probably got eaten.
Oh, I was gonna see it.
Spider-Man: Homecoming.
Casey.
I like the character stuff they did with Peter. I like how they kind of emphasize him saving people, you know, in all of his set pieces. I think in the end, Michael Keaton ended up being a good villain.
Yeah.
And again, like, and also has like one of the better like end lines in a movie.
Yeah, that was like, good.
Well, that was the one sincere laugh I got out of this whole fucking movie.
And see, that's already a good sign that they're like ending the movie there, and it's like, well, now we have a great springboard for the sequel. So, yeah. Anyway, it's fucking late. We've been recording for a while. Hope you've enjoyed our rambling on Baby Driver and Spider-Man Homecoming. And if you agreed with us, or if you hated our guts for believing in different things than you, be sure to tell us in the comments.
Just talk to us. We're lonely.
Yeah, MAGA. We don't have friends. We're not even friends with each other.
I hate this, all of you. Why am I doing this?
This is a contractual obligation.
Who are you guys?
If, guys, the second the judge's ruling expires, I will never talk to you again.
Fine. Fine.
Oh, 2028 can't come soon enough.
It's Carson, Ned, and Tyler, the geeks at large. And with that, we'll remain at large.
Sure.
What the fuck?
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.